Welcome to the workshop. I've been around the Navigators a long time and really don't know the difference between a workshop, a discussion group, and a seminar. But I think in the workshop, everybody's supposed to do some work of some kind. So if you have one of these sheets, I just brought 100 of them. I hope we got enough here. There are some blanks to fill in as you go along the way. Okay? That'll be your work part. Fill that in. You just look at the top of the sheet here. There's just two or three preliminary remarks. By the way, who in the workshop here is 21 or younger? Great. Because in a little bit, I want to put a letter on the screen that Dawson Tartman wrote when he was 21 years old. That'll be coming up in just a little bit. But just a little background on the Navigators. Look down in paragraph 3. 75 years ago, 75 years later, the movement had multiplied and has the Navigator presence in 107 countries, led by 4,600 staff, of which 40% are non-Americans. And some of the staff are here in this workshop this morning. So would you stand up, the Navigator staff? Okay, I think there are about seven. There are 4,600 out in various parts of the world in 107 countries, of which 40% are non-Americans. Okay, now looking at the sheet here, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So one of the reasons I think it's important that we study Navigator history is so that we profit by what's gone on before and don't get away from the original. In 1933, after having several successful youth and young men's ministries and having prayed to God to raise up down-to-business young men all over the world, 27-year-old Dawson Tartman met 22-year-old U.S. Navy sailor Lester Spencer. You're going to see a picture of him in just a minute. And then that one contact led to what we have in existence today. Should be a purpose of the workshop here, and that's in the next sentence here. This workshop will review some of the acts and principles the Lord used in establishing the Navigators, so that present and future generations will continue multiplying by perpetuating that which started 75 years ago. And by the way, if you have a question or comment, anytime, break right in. Don't wait to the end for a discussion on this. Okay, Bruce, could you have the next slide there?
We're going to have to move you over there.
Yeah.
Get this thing out.
Okay, I'll get out of the way here. There was a retired British general who became director of the China Inland Mission. And this is a statement that he made, which we want to use for background. There are three words in here that we want to emphasize. Now, this is a typical British prose. And it needs to be edited a little bit. But let's read it together. When God raises up a man for special service, he first works in that man the principles which later on are, through his labors and influence, to be the means of widespread blessing to the church and the world. Well, if we could just edit that a little bit. I'll try to do that, and you see if you agree with me on it. What Mr. Host is saying, when God gets ready to bless the church and the world. He right through certain principles, he raises up a man to model those principles. Would that be a fair editing of it? So in the mind of God, he wanted to bless, I'll just edit a little bit, the world through the revival of some principles. And so he picked out a man to do that. So in the paper here, I've got a blank there. God's purpose in raising up the navigators was to bless the world through some principles. That okay on that? So if you're going to write something in the blank, you can put that down. So, a man that you had to have. So, the next slide, Bruce, has got this. Well, just a couple of statements here. Go ahead and we can read that one. And then the next one. And the next one. Here's the letter written January 16th, 1928, by this 20-year-old young man, and quite a few 21 or younger in here. Now, let's see. You guys over here can't see that, can you?
Can you back just a little bit farther? Is it, will that be in focus?
Yeah, we can move back a little bit, yeah, on there and refocus it there. Yeah, he can refocus it there. Read that and follow along so we follow together.
Dear sirs, I am writing to you for advice in a matter of much importance to me. I graduated from high school in June 1923. Owing to the fact that I had little or no ambition in life, my education was sadly neglected. I have worked these 4.5 years, 2 in selling dry goods and furniture, and the remaining 2.5 years in a lumber yard. I am now driving a Ross carrier in a lumber yard, and I'm nearly 22.
Just pause for a minute. Do you know what a Ross carrier is? Well, he worked in a lumber yard, and it's like a forklift. And rode this high wheel carriage that had a forklift underneath to pick up a bunch of 2x4s. Now, most lumber yards are crowded, and this thing was built like a ferry boat. So it could go forward and backwards, never turned around, just go forward backwards. So he learned to drive backwards just as well as he could drive forward. So when I first met him, we'd go someplace in a car. The traffic in Los Angeles wasn't what it is today. He would take a look at the corner and ahead, see which was the closest street. And if the closest street was behind, he'd back down that street. Because he could drive just as well backwards as he could forward. So that's what he's talking about. He was running one of these characters as a teenager in there.
About a year and a half ago, I was converted from a wild life. Drinking, gambling, thieving, lying, smoking, and having a party in my wake, my makeup. I am now saved by grace, and I have had victory in overcoming all of these wild habits. Perhaps one of the most rotten dispositions, also having been defeated through the power of Jesus Christ. I've been the president of one of the liveliest Christian Endeavor societies for a year and a half, spent many precious moments in service for him. I have preached 2 sermons and have given many talks, and I'm not afraid to stand out anywhere.
Now, I want you to look for 3 things that are underlined in this letter as we go on, then we'll review them.
My happiest moments are spent in dealing with men, boys, and girls about Jesus Christ. As a fisherman, Matthew 4:19, I have won 2 souls to Christ. I say this only that you might know the little experience I have had. I love to pray, having had real burdens, and delight in reading God's Word. I have memorized 10 chapters of the Bible and can quote about 120 passages, being able to tell where they are. I memorize while I work. Having set my goal for souls high, I must do big things for the Master, and I look to you as having had practical experience for advice as to preparation, realizing my utter inability to do anything but by and through Him. Expository preaching holds much attraction for me. thanking you kindly for your service. Yours respectively, Dawson Trotman. P.S. I am just beginning a course in Better English with the International Correspondence Schools.
There are some misspelled words in here, but this is the copy of the original, just the way that he wrote it. Now, Bruce, would you back it up again, two slides here. This one right here. I'm not afraid to stand out anywhere and preach the gospel. So he said the happiest moments of his life is when he was talking to people about Christ. That's one of the principles in here. What other ones did you see?
Love to pray. He had a focus on men, boys, and girls about Jesus Christ. He had a burden for souls.
Okay. How about the next one?
The word was important, both to study and to memorize.
Both in study and memory. And then there was one on prayer. He loved to pray. So the principles that God wanted revived in the body were these three things: the word, prayer, and outreach or witnessing. So if you're filling in the paper here under principles, the three main principles were the word, prayer, and outreach. So we believe that God wanted this emphasis restored to the body. These principles, he picked out a man that would model these principles, although he was only 21. Okay, next one, Bruce. He was mentored by a Presbyterian pastor named Vernon. I'll just give his first name. He figured out that the elements of the Christian life needed to keep vital were the word, prayer, and witnessing. So he taught Dawson Trotman these three things. Dawson Trotman realized to keep his life vital, these were the inputs that he needed, these three. So this was, his illustration was a three-legged milk stool. Now, Dawson Trotman didn't like this illustration. In the first place, he didn't like the idea of a Christian seated, you know, sitting down. And he said, I know people that are strong in the word, prayer, and witnessing, but they have such a sour disposition, they turn everybody off. So the next slide, he came up with a new illustration. And this was the original wheel illustration that he used. Now, pick up your program here for a minute, will you? Just let me borrow yours for a minute here. There's one thing that appears 22 times in this program. Must be important to be mentioned 22 times, isn't it? What is it? It's on the front. It's on the back. It's on almost every page in between here, up in the corner. So he came up with this more dynamic illustration and added this spoke, living the life, which was based on Colossians 3:23, which is, whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as unto the Lord, and not unto man. But I want to refer to this a little bit more as the flexible spoke, or perhaps the weak spoke, because it's been changed three times. But the other three didn't change. So maybe that the milk stool was just as good an illustration as the wheel illustration. Now, the way we used to present the wheel illustration to a new person was in the necessity for physical life. One of the things is that you eat. Is that right? Well, the necessity for the spiritual life is that we feed on the Word. To maintain physical life, you have to breathe. No. So in the spiritual life, to maintain the spiritual life, we have to pray. That's equivalent to breathing. Now, maybe not all of us have heeded this, but many people believe that to sustain physical life and keep in good health, you have to exercise. I think personally, I've been influenced by the president of the University of Chicago. Somebody asked him once, "Do you exercise?" He said, "No. Sometimes I have the feeling that I should, so I lie down and remain real quiet until the feeling passes." And I personally like Henry Ford's philosophy. He said, "Never stand when you can sit. Never sit when you can lie down." But not everybody agrees with that, say that exercise is necessary. So the exercise in the spiritual life is by outreach or witnessing. We'll probably change that spoke one of these days to outreach, both to Christians and non-Christians. Okay, God had his man. He had the principles. Now, the next thing that happened in the sequence of the navigators was a six-week prayer meeting. And Steve, if we can play track two, we'll get a little hear his voice on that.
It came from a simple verse of Scripture, Jeremiah 3:3, the next chapter up to the one I just read. Jeremiah said to the Lord, "Lord, you are the God of all flesh, and have these two hearts." 10 verses later, the Lord says to Jeremiah, "I am the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me?" And then just a few verses later, he says, "All right, the proof of it is called to me. And I will." That's what Jesus said when he said, "Verily, verily, the things that I do to you, you are greater things than these than you do, because I go to my Father, and whatsoever you shall ask in my name, that will I do." You know, I used to use that verse perhaps just for 50 cents in the dollar. I don't use it anymore. I use Matthew 7:7 when I go for steps. But when I go for the work, where it says, "Greater work than me shall ye do, and whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I not give, but do." That's what he said here. "I am the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Call unto me, and I will show you great mighty things." And I found it out. Well, I said, "Well, do you believe this verse?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I do too, but I've never seen it." The verse says, "Call and I'll show you things you haven't seen." How could I see? I said, "I'd like to see that." And so we started the prayer meeting every morning. And we set it to be at a certain spot with a choir built and going strong and fine. Not 1 minute after five, we didn't wait a day. And we met him for 42 days straight. We prayed 2 hours in the weekdays, and we met at 4 on Sunday. We prayed for those Sunday school boys I told you about, and the Sunday school. And we prayed for them all by name. We prayed for Harvard City and Torrance and Long Beach and San Pedro and Los Angeles and Pasadena and the surrounding cities, from which I had received calls from young Christian fellows saying, "If you'll come over here and show me how you're reaching these boys." And I prayed for those areas. In the third and fourth week, we began to extend up the coast, San Francisco, Oakland, Seattle, and Portland. We said, "Lord, use us in these cities." And by the fourth or fifth week, we had taken them to every state in the Union. And we lifted them. Washington, Oregon. And we said, "Lord, use us to win young men to you in the state of Oregon. Use us to win young men in Massachusetts." And every morning we prayed for every one of the 48 states. And then, near the about the sixth week, I don't know which said to the other, but the subject came up something like this. If God is big enough, if we believe God is big enough to let us win men in every one of the 48 states, let's go whole hog. Let's go all out. And we brought ourselves a little wool map and we stuck it up in the hill up there, the Palo Verde Hills,
where we used to go, and we left it overnight and covered it with a bush, and we pulled this old map of the world out, and we prayed that the Lord would use us in China, and in Japan, and in Korea. And at the end of 42 days, I felt a burden. I began to stop asking God to do it, and I began to think that He was going to do it. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for. And faith is substance. It's reality. It's something you can believe in. Now faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God, and we claim the promise.
So in the sequence of it's a prayer meeting, 42 prayer meetings that Dawson Trotman just described. And he asked for men to be raised up, all of the then 48 states. I wonder how many states are represented at this conference here. Other than Texas, how many have come places other than Texas here? Almost half. Well, Dawson Trotman prayed back in 1928 that God would raise up some men in all the 48 states. Now, they took a map of the world. Now, this was before my time, and I asked him once, do you remember what countries you put your finger on and asked God to raise up young men and women there? He said, well, I remember a few of them, but not all of them. But those of us who travel for the Navigators today can pretty well reconstruct what those where they put their fingers on, as we now have a presence in 107 countries. Okay, after the prayer meeting, the next thing that happened in the sequence then, with the next, on the way to the prayer meeting, he took one of his good friends, Walt Stanton, and said, we got to pray that God will do these great and mighty things. And he said, would you meet with me to pray every day? And Walt said, yeah. He said, well, I'll pick you up at 3:30 in the morning. And Walt thought he said 3:30 in the morning. And sure enough, he said 3:30 in the morning. So Dawson picked him up on his motorcycle and took him down to this prayer meeting that he just talked about in the tape that you heard. Okay, next one. Maybe a blank in there. Next thing that he needed was a laboratory. Now, only God could see what the nearest perfect laboratory there was in the world. And that was the ships of the U.S. Navy. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. That is the battleship West Virginia, where it all started. I'll talk more about that in just a little bit. But for 10 years, that was where the ministry thrived, till she was sunk at Pearl Harbor. Okay, Bruce, have I got a next one in there? Pretty soon after this prayer meeting, Dawson Trotman met this guy right here, called, his name was Lester Spencer. He joined the Navy. In those days, there was no GI Bill or college loan program. If you had the money, you could go to college. If you didn't have the money, you couldn't. That's just that clear. So many people went in the Navy to save money to go to college and seminary. This was one of them. He wanted to be a pastor. But he didn't know much about Christian life or Christian work. By the way, this tape that you just heard and several others can be listened to on a Navigator website. And it's simply discipleshiplibrary.com. Brad, who runs this website, Brad Ray, is here at the conference. I don't see him with us here this morning. But I asked him when I saw him a couple of days ago, how many tapes are available on that website? He said, 25,000. There's more tapes you can listen to and download than you can do in your lifetime. And now he's converting, he's making videos out of most of them. So there's enough information on that website to last you the rest of your life. If you want to hear this whole message, it's called The Need of the Hour. There's this extract that I played from. Dawson Trotman was asked to speak a lot. You know, he had great demand as a speaker. And most places he spoke wanted to print a bulletin of, you know, what his subject was. So he would just tell them the need of the hour. And then he'd decide when he got up to speak what the need of the hour was. So it covered quite a broad range. So this is one of his messages on the need of the hour, where he talks about this prayer meeting. The whole message is available. Also on the website is a 44-minute presentation by the guy on the right, Lester Spencer, on how he met Dawson Trotman and why he got in touch. We won't have time to cover those today. But you can find them on that website and listen to them or download them. Okay, he met this young sailor, and Les describes this in the tape that I mentioned. And he invited him over to have chicken dinner at their home. So Lester went over, and then they parked in the hills over San Pedro Harbor, and just to have a little, get acquainted, you know, maybe talk and pray. And while they're sitting in the car, a watchman with a big star on him came up and knocked on the door of the car. Well, they found out later that they were parked in Lover's Lane up there. And this was during the days that liquor was outlawed. And when a policeman came up to check on a meeting, he generally wanted to know, where's the bottle? So this watchman came up, big star, and he said, okay, guys, where's the bottle? Now, many policemen weren't trying to enforce the law. They were looking for a free sample. And I remember during these days of prohibition, I knew people remember that, but I read an article in the paper about this Chicago gangster who was killed, and said he left a wife and seven policemen to support. So Dawson Trotman said to him, we don't have a bottle. We have a Bible. And the policeman, he was actually a watchman at a schoolhouse, but he had a badge. He was kind of skeptical. And he said, actually, the watchman was guarding a schoolhouse. And he said, if you don't believe me, you got to keep the building. Go and turn on the lights, and we will. I'll show you what we're doing. So he did. They went in. And so Dawson presented the gospel to him. And every question he asked, Dawson could turn to the exact verse in Scripture and show him the answer. Now, he didn't receive Christ, but he had every objection he had answered from Scripture. So this young 22-year-old sailor was watching this, and that's amazing. Anybody knows the Bible and how to use it like that. And after it's over, he told Dawson Trotman, I would give my right arm if I could handle the Bible like you did. And so Dawson Trotman said, no, you wouldn't. I've heard other people say that. And Spencer said, I said I would. So Dawson said, okay, you can keep your right arm, and I'll teach you. So it was everybody that's been influenced by the Navigators, either to come to Christ or be built up in the faith, is a spiritual grandson of Lester Spencer over on the right. He was the first. Well, then he contacted another fellow, Gurney Harris, on his left. And he'd come in the Navy for the same purpose, to go to school get money for college and seminary and become a pastor. But he'd been in the Navy about 4 years and kind of lost his vision. So Dawson Trotman, Lester, took him over to meet Dawson Trotman. And he said, now here's a man that needs what you've been teaching me even more than I did. So here he is. And Dawson Trotman said, why don't you teach him? And Spencer said, I could never do that, you know. And Dawson said, if you can't repeat what I've taught you, I'm a failure as a teacher. I'm going to start all over again with you. So he refused to take on Harris and said, you teach him. Well, that was really foundational in the Navigators and the basis of 2 Timothy 2:2, the things that you've heard among me witnesses, the same commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So then these two guys contacted the next two. One of them was an atheist, one was an agnostic. The guy back behind here, Ed Goodrick, was the agnostic. Now, if you have an NIV concordance, there's seven of them put out, various sizes. You'll notice they were put together by Edward W. Goodrick. This is a guy right here in this picture. He wanted to become a Greek and Hebrew scholar. Harris spent his life in Africa as a missionary. John Dedrick spent his life in Mexico with Wycliffe translators. Virgil Hook, the next guy behind here, spent his life in China, including Tibet. So these three guys, three of them, served overseas. Well, I knew all these who were my friends, and they all worked on me. So I was number six. I didn't come along in time to show in the picture. Now, the sailor back there, we're thrilled to find out, trying to find out who he is. But he apparently just showed up for the picture. And now, if anybody has a clue who he is, why, let us know, because we don't know. He happened to be there when the picture was taken. It's all we can figure out in this. Okay, God had his laboratory. Now, I think it's missing off of this slide. Maybe let's see what the next one is, Bruce. Navigators have got several pretty elaborate headquarters today of various parts of the world. And Colorado Springs is one of them. But Dawson Trotman worked pumping gas for Texaco. And he and his wife lived in that trailer house behind. So the first Navigator headquarters where Dawson met and discipled these men was that little trailer house behind the gas station there. Well, the guys in the Navy had a lot of leisure time, and they went generally Wednesday afternoons off, Saturday afternoons off. So these four guys, or five of them now, would come over for Dawson Trotman to teach them, and he wasn't available. He was pumping gas, you know. They said, there's something wrong with this picture. You've got what we want. You're not available. Why? So Dawson said, well, the fact is that my wife and I have developed a very bad habit. And that is that we eat three times a day. And so I work for Texaco, make the money to feed my wife and I our meals. So these guys were real sharp. They said, well, if we would supply the same amount of money that Texaco pays you, would you give your full time to us? That seemed like a good deal. It didn't cost much to live then. You could get an apartment for $35 a month. So these four guys pitched in from their pay enough money that he was released from Texaco and became full time. And tomorrow morning you will hear a financial presentation. Got a little bit of it last night. But generally the reason that we have these 4,600 staff around the world is that there's a demand on their time. That they can't, if they're working, they don't have the time. So that used to be a way that the navigators raised money. When the ministry demanded the time full time, then they would raise money and go on staff in that. Well, I don't want to get off on the side on that. But there's a promise in here, and I translated this slide from one word processing to another, and I think that blank was where he missed that, yeah. But I've got it written down here, the promise, down the bottom of the front page. You see it there, Isaiah 58:12. A few months after I'd become a Christian, Dawson Trotman and I were going to spend the day alone. And so he picked me up at the Navy landing, but instead of going to his home, he pulled into a vacant parking place. And he said, I got something I got to show you. So we pulled in this vacant parking place. He opened up his Bible and read this verse to me. And he said, I'm scared to death, but I know God has told me he's going to do this through me. Scared to death. You will raise up, you'll build the foundations, last part of it, of many generations. So you notice in the back of your book here that the purpose of the navigators is a generational ministry, a reproducing ministry that began when Dawson Trotman said to Lester Spencer, you teach him. So he taught him, then he taught others, generational. So he said, you will be the foundation of many generations. So you're a part of those generations that God has raised up. Okay, the laboratory. I think there's some blank or two in there. Oh, that's what this young sailor looked like back when this all got started, age 19. Okay. Dawson Trotman felt there were only two kinds of Christians, those that were down to business and not down to business. We have a lot of categories today of Christians. He only had two, either down to business or not down to business. Okay, now, Bruce, the next one there. May skip a few, just keep hitting it till we come up with a new one. Aboard ship, it was a perfect laboratory because we didn't have sophisticated equipment in those days. Had a lot of spare time. Get up at 5:30, breakfast at 7:30, work till noon. Work day ended at 7:30. And from then on till midnight was dead time, unless you were on watch. So our little gang on there met from 7:30 to 10 o'clock nearly every night in that. Monday, we had back it up, Bruce, we can get the top of that one there. I guess we can't get it on the top. Monday night, we studied New Testament chapter. Tuesday, we had an evangelistic Bible study for the entire ship. Wednesday, we had an extended prayer meeting, studied prayer. Get the next one here now. Thursday, fellowship and an Old Testament chapter. Friday, fellowship and a topical Bible study. Weekend at sea, in addition to daily routine, we had a mini conference. So we didn't have any speaker, but we had books of sermons of all the great Christians of all time. And we'd read through one of those books that all afternoon. Now, can you imagine what it'd be like if you, as a single person, were in a situation where there was no newspapers, no radio, no TV, no satellites, no VCR, and you had this several hours of spare time every day? That would be a picnic, wouldn't it? So God started out with the perfect laboratory on the ship. We would spend 2.5 hours together every night. Monday night, Bible study, 2.5 hours, New Testament. Tuesday, an evangelistic study that was announced over the PA system. Wednesday, prayed for that 2.5 hours. Thursday, took an Old Testament chapter. Friday we took a topic. One of the fellows in our group there wrote a letter to one of his friends, and he said, Friday night we have a topical study, and this last week we studied Satan. And he said, and we're all really filled with the subject. A little slip. I think he didn't intend to put it in the letter. And then I mentioned, now, there's a little more on the routine. Let's see what else we got up here. Oh, this is one of our core teams on the West Virginia. And I want to tell you a story about this guy over to the right here. His name is John Prince. Okay, I'll hold a little closer. Thank you. It's plenty of volume. I think I just wasn't holding it close enough. He would witness to anything that moved. Actually, he operated as the chaplain's assistant. One Sunday, our chaplain was gone, and a visiting chaplain sent over his topic of his message, and it was, why I don't believe the Bible. So John Prince, this guy, got a hold of R.A. Torrey's tract on how we know the Bible is the Word of God and slipped it in the order of worship. So while the chaplain was out there preaching why I don't believe the Bible, all the people were reading this tract, how we know the Bible is the Word of God. So the chaplain's message fell a little flat, you know, because people could read faster than they could listen to him up there. Let's see, guess the next one. Yeah, now this is a letter from a diary of Cecil Davidson, who's NAV staff, that he was a radio on watch. I want to tell you the background. You notice down at the bottom here, he said, I copied a message and said, Alvin W. Abel died of unknown causes on the Long Beach Pike. He put that in his diary. Okay, put my handkerchief over that thing a little bit. So, John Prince, the guy you just saw, we had a good situation that in order to, as a bonus to re-enlist, a sailor could pick any ship in the Navy to re-enlist on. So we made the West Virginia was a missionary ship, you know, every 4 years, re-enlist, sent him a new ship. So he went to the battleship Idaho, and the day he got over to the ship, he met somebody he had offended and witnessed to. And Alvin Abel was the guy, and he said, if you open your mouth about Jesus Christ on this ship, I'm going to give you a bad time. He threatened him. I don't know what he threatened him with. And John Prince told me this. He said, I shudder to think of my response. He said, when he did that, I said, Lord, I pray you'll either convert him or remove him. That night, he went ashore. He died of unknown causes on the Long Beach Pike, and his death certificate showed unknown causes. Would that give you a mandate? You know, either convert him or remove him. So he went on to have a fabulous ministry on that ship. What have we got next year, Bruce? I don't think I'm going to be able to cover all these because I do want to have time for questions and discussion. But there's three kinds of statistics, three kinds of lies, whether you've heard this, you know, white lies, black lies, and statistics. But between 1949 and 1989, at that time, the population of the world in 1950 was 2.5 million. By 1889, 5 million. Population doubled. The number of people who became Christians, people who claimed to be Christians, for the first time in history, doubled from 1.6 million to 3.4 million. But the great thing in this is there are a group of people who call themselves Great Commission Christians. They know that they have a responsibility of reaching the world. They increased from 80 million to 500 million. That was due mainly to the Ministry of the Navigators, these guys that came out of the fleet. So isn't that something? 500 times. Now, grew 500% in that. Well, no more for that. That's what the West Virginia looked like after Pearl Harbor. And kind of bad to break up our little thing that's going on. But remember in Acts 4 that Jesus had told the disciples to go out into all the world. And they didn't. So he had to bring persecution. And when he brought the persecution, then they scattered. So our guys scattered throughout the fleet. It broke up, you know, the guy we had on there. So it was a real blessing to start all those new ministries because we would not have voluntarily broken up except about every 4 years. Well, I think I'll just speed up here on the outline. And here's another one I had in there that... we still got a ways to go. This is on the internet. You can check every day to see what's happening. The population of the world is expanding at the rate of about 70 million a year. And that boils down to there is a birth every minute. Well, look at every hour. 15,000 births per hour. So the hour that we're sitting in this workshop, there'll be 15,000 new people in the world. There will be 6,000 deaths for a net increase of 150. A net increase of 9,000 per hour. So when we finish, there'd be 9,000 more people on Earth than there are today. That boils down to 2.5 per second. Every second goes by, there's a net increase of 2.5 people. Okay, shut that off, and I'll speed up here a little bit. That's Dawson Trotman towards the end of his years. But he was a perfectionist. And... one day he said, if I were not a perfectionist, there would not be a navigator ministry today. Now, some of you may have perfectionist tendencies. My wife does. And I have to remind her occasionally that we're not in heaven yet. So she may have to put up with a few imperfections. But Dawson Trotman was hard to work with. Because we'd work all day getting something settled at midnight and say, well, finally we can lay this to rest. The next morning, he would say, I think there's probably a better way to do this. So we started all over again. The only thing that he really laid to rest was the best way to reach the world is through multiplication. That the world we reach spiritually the same way that was reached physically, by everyone reproducing. So he decided, you know, I don't have to work on that anymore. That's what I'll give my life to. Now, I've taken too much time in the early part, so I'll just try to summarize the notes here so we can have some discussion. But let me give you a theoretical problem. The world's population today is just a little bit over 6 billion. Now, suppose God said, I'm going to stop everything until we reach these 6 billion with the gospel. So there'd be no births, no deaths, no growth, no aging. And I'm going to commission Billy Graham to evangelize 1,000 people a day, 365,000 a year. When Billy had evangelized all of the 6 billion, how old would he be? The figure's at the bottom of the page on the back here, down at the bottom. See it there? What is it? It would take him 1,643,836 years. Okay, that's one approach to it. I'll just take another approach. I grew up in the Midwest, and my grandfather used to raise mules. And there was no scientific marketing procedures in those days. So when he needed some cash, he'd order up a couple of stock cars on the railroad and put 15 mules in each one of them, ship them down to Kansas City. So he did this one week and found out everybody else that raised mules had the same idea that week. And there were so many mules on the market that the buyers wouldn't buy them. Well, he didn't want to ship them back. So he went to the buyer, and he said, well, it's obvious I made a mistake, but I'll make a deal with you. If you give me $1 for the first mule, and then $2 for the second, and $4 for the third, you can just go on down the line. You can have the whole bunch. And the buyer shook hands and says, it's a deal. And then they sat down and figured out the bill. You know what that 30th mule was worth? $2 billion. There wasn't enough money in Kansas City to buy that 30th mule. That's the difference between addition and multiplication. Now look at the paragraph on the back of the sheet which said Andrew Murray, 1900. 6 years before George Strassman is born, he wrote, if there were only one Christian in the world, and he worked and prayed a year to win one friend to Christ, and if these two men continued each year to win one more, and if every person thus led to the kingdom led another to Christ every year, in 31 years, every person in the world would be won for Christ. The population was 2 billion at that time. Well, you double 2 billion, you got 4 billion. You double it again, and you've got 8 billion. So instead of 31 years, it'd take 35 now by multiplication. But you don't have to start with one person because we've already got 500 million of Great Commission Christians. It does take a year for a person to get ready to lead somebody else to Christ. I was in a meeting with Dawson Trotman. It was a small room, and it was very crowded. We had an evangelist. And he asked anybody that wanted to receive Christ to stand. So Dawson asked me to come to the rear of the room to watch anybody that stood up so we could follow up on them. So one of the fellows I'd brought over from the ship stood up, and when he did, he braced against another guy sitting so close. So this guy next to him looked up, saw, scanned his face, and then he stood up. And Dawson Trotman whispered in my ear, he said, a Christian doesn't have to be a Christian very long before he influences somebody else, does he? So it doesn't take a year, and you don't have to start with one. So you can do the math. Elton Trueblood said, it's too late to add. Go out and multiply. So the navigators are about multiplication, not addition. Everyone reproducing. Why hasn't this happened? Because there's a broken link in the chain. Anytime the chain breaks down, you have to start all over again. Don't you? In that. But that's been emphasized in the messages this week. Help somebody else. Now, Dawson Trotman's probably life verse was Colossians 1:28. And Paul said his passion was to bring every person to maturity. The sequence here in these words I've got in the shaper is tools leads to maturity. Maturity leads to multiplication and reproduction. Reproduction leads to the Great Commission. He was right in that. So just to reemphasize what you've heard all week, this is what the navigators are about, is the things that you've heard of me, the same commit to faithful men who will teach others also. Four generations, you know. Paul to Timothy, Timothy to faithful men to others also. Well, I had more in the outline and on the slides that I can cover. The last section here is about Dawson Trotman. Died when he was age 50. He was in a speedboat up in Scroon Lake, New York, and there were five of them packed into this four-passenger boat. Now, there were more than that. There were eight in this four-passenger boat. So he asked if anybody couldn't swim. And there were two girls in the boat that couldn't swim. And he said, well, lock arms with me. And so if you fall over, you won't fall over if you can't swim. But the man running the boat, Jack Wirtson, turned too fast, hit a wave. And Dawson and the girl on his left fell over in the lake. Well, he was a good swimmer. He knew she couldn't swim. So he got underneath her, treaded water, and held her up, circled the boat back, picked her up. When they pulled her out of his arms, why, his arms drifted apart, and he sank. So he used the last bit of energy he had, saving the life of this girl. And Time magazine featured him the next week after it happened. And under the caption under his picture was, "Always holding someone up." I thought that was a very fitting tribute to him. Spent his life doing that. Well, I want to know what you're interested about Navigator history. So forget about the outline. Forget about the slides here. And do you have a question that I might know the answer to? Okay. Jack?
Were you on the West Virginia when they bombed Pearl Harbor?
I had been serving in that ship. The question was, was I on the West Virginia? I missed the first 20 minutes. Fortunately, I was off the ship when the 11 minutes the Japanese took to drop 40 torpedoes and I don't know how many bombs on there. If I'd have been on, five torpedoes went off right where I'd have been. I wouldn't be here today. So the Lord had me off the ship. But 20 minutes after the attack, I was aboard ship for the next 2.5 hours there during the remainder of the battle. Yeah.
Jim?
Would you mind telling us a little bit about some of the things that happened during the, you know, when you were aboard ship, just some of the things that God did? In the fleet while you were aboard ship?
I think I understood the question. Some of the things we did on the ship, was that the question? I can't hear very well up here.
Yeah, some of the things that God did during the conflict while you guys were aboard ship.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that we got a little proud and arrogant because we concluded that the U.S. Navy existed for our convenience. And if we didn't like the schedule, we'd pray be changed. And it was changed. If we didn't like the captain, we would pray that God would remove him. And he would. If we didn't like the chaplain, we'd pray God would remove him. And he did. So we kind of got in the habit, you know, that Paul got government transportation from Caesarea down to Rome, you know. And so we kind of felt like the government was providing transportation for us to go wherever that God wanted us to go. But I'll just say one incident. From 10 minutes till 6 every night until 7:30 was dead time. Now, if the weather permitted and we weren't in maneuvers, they showed a movie on the fantail of the ship every night. And we never did attend the movies. So we would take from 10 minutes till 6 to 7:30 every night to fan out and evangelize on the ship. 1,500 men on the ship. And so you imagine a team of 6 or 8 guys every night, you know, for 1 hour and 10 minutes out evangelizing. And we saw a lot of people come to Christ in that time, but deliberate. About the laboratory, I think there's no perfect laboratory today. But the nearer that a situation can imitate the battleship laboratory, the more effective it'll be. I go to around a lot of campuses and meet with our team there, and I sometimes tell them what the West Virginia, what we did, the routine. And they say, well, we could do that. We could do that. So they pick up little ideas, you know, we can duplicate that. But perfect laboratory, and that's where God used to turn these basic principles into steel threads of character. I think it's a good way to describe it.
How many, at the end of the war, how many ships and how many men did you feel like we had reached?
Well, Jack Holt has researched that better than anybody else. And the Navigator Publicity, the Time Magazine article brings this out. There were groups of navigators on more than 1,000 ships and stations. But Jack's pointed out that the Navy has never had that many ships at any time. So I think what they meant was there were people at 1,000 military addresses. You know, in a division in the Army, why there's dozens of addresses. So on our mailing list were people from more than 1,000. Last night, Steve showed a picture of Gordon Gustafson. He was aboard the Tennessee, led the ministry that was tied up the West Virginia in the morning. It was sunk. And, you know, we were good friends. And during the attack, I was afraid of going to get fuel oil in my wristwatch. So I asked Gus if he'd put it in his pocket, you know, because the Tennessee wasn't damaged that morning. But he was a guy in charge of the ministry on the Tennessee then. Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about the development with the Billy Graham Association and how that came about?
Yes. A good question. That a lot of our guys.
Question too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The question was about the association with Billy Graham. One of the men who had the ministry aboard the battleship Mississippi, named John Streeter, he went to Wheaton College, and to make money on the side, he drove a pickup, had a pickup to move people around. So he needed a manual laborer to help him, and the manual laborer was a student named Billy Graham. So Billy sometimes says that John was my boss when he moved furniture and stuff for people in his pickup. So Dawson Tromlin went to visit John Streeter at Wheaton College, and John said, I want you to meet my laborer. You know, the guy does the manual work. And so Billy Graham told this at Dawson Tromlin's funeral service. He said, Dawson shook hands with me. I said, good morning, Billy. I'm glad to meet you. And Dawson said he made me feel like the most important person he'd ever met. And then Dawson said, Billy, what did God say to you in the quiet time this morning? And Billy said, I was embarrassed. I had not had a quiet time that morning. So that's the way they met the first time. Then Billy Graham started out his ministry with Youth for Christ. Dawson Trotman was on the board of Youth for Christ, so they worked together on that. Then later, Billy Graham, his next part in his career, he was the president of Northwestern Schools up in Minneapolis. So he asked Dawson Trotman, who had known these many years, will you come up and speak chapel some morning? And Dawson said, how much time would I have? He said, well, ordinarily it's 15 minutes. We could probably stretch it to 20 minutes, you know, if you want to. Dawson said, if you'll give me an hour a day for a week, I'll come. So Billy did. And so Dawson Trotman spoke, an hour a day for a week at the chapel. And after Billy had listened to him, he said, we've got to have this in the curriculum. So he asked for a staff man to move to Minneapolis to teach the Navigator Babies in Scripture Memory in Northwestern schools. Then when Billy became an evangelist, knowing Trotman, this is in his tape, Born to Reproduce. He tells about this. Billy said, "You've got to come and help me." Billy actually made a study of why evangelists succeeded or failed, and it had to do with money, morality, and follow-up. So he's tried to avoid all three mistakes, and he recruited Dawson Trotman to do follow-up. And Dawson said, "I'm busy. I run an organization. I don't have time. You got to get somebody else." And Billy said, "There is nobody else." So for the next few years, next 15 years, Dawson Trotman, Lauren Sani taught counselor training on the Billy Graham team in that. So that was their association, but it's longstanding. Dawson was older than Billy Graham. But again, on the website, if you want to hear Billy Graham's remarks at his memorial service, you can listen to it or download it on the internet from that website. Very interesting presentation that Billy gave that day.
Inherently, with any organization, sometimes it's easy to lose the vision that you once had. If there was anything that you feel like Dawson would say is a big temptation for us to lose the vision today, what would you say that is?
Yeah, the question was, it's easy to lose the vision. And, what did Dawson think about it? How do you perpetuate it? You know, a good biographical sketch of many organizations is, it starts with a man, then there's a movement, and then a machine, and then a monument. And so I hope we're always in the movement stage, and don't go in the machine stage and then become a monument in here. But after Lauren Sani, who was second president of Navigators, started to work for Dawson Trotman, Lauren Sani asked Dawson Trotman that question. He said, "How do you maintain a vision for working with others for reproduction?" And Dawson Trotman turned to him and he said, "When you ask a question like that, I wonder if you've really got it." If you really got the vision, you won't lose it. But if it fades away, you probably never had it in the first place. And I guess that would be his answer on that.
Jim, where was the word navigator? Where did that derive from, and why was it?
Will somebody relay that up?
Where did the word navigator come from? Who thought it up, and when did it start?
Okay, that's a good question. I'll try to be real brief. In this picture, I showed you the four guys. One of them was John Dedrick. He was a radioman by trade, but a very high achiever. So he studied celestial navigation on the side, just to master that art. So he told Dawson Trotman that's what he did with his spare time. And Dawson Trotman, in order to get time with him, said, "Would you teach me how to do celestial navigation?" He did it. He wasn't that interested, but he wanted to get time with him. So as he began to explain John Dedrick navigation, which is the art and science of moving from one point on the earth to another, that's what navigation's about. And he said, Dawson said, "Well, everybody's navigating through life, between heaven now and eternity. Without a captain, and a compass, and a chart, and a sextant, never make it." So he said, "We're all spiritual navigators." So he just latched onto that name from John Dedrick, you know, spiritual navigation. So that's really what we're talking about, spiritual navigation. Now, the Presbyterians have a men's organization called the Mariners, and a lot of times people confuse the Mariners and the Navigators. But spiritual navigation, that's a brief on that. One of the tapes that's on that library has got, I interviewed John Dedrick, and it's on tape, how the name got started. You know, how he talked to Dawson Trotman about it. It's on one of those library tapes.
Is that under your name?
It's under my name, and the tape is West Virginia Gang. There's two of them. One a videotape made in 1983 and another made in 1885, which also contains Lester Spencer's description of his meeting with Jobs. And I already mentioned that. But that's a source of great information for somebody who's interested in following through. Yeah, here's one way back here. Yeah, when somebody relayed that up, I didn't.
How did Lawrence Sanney come into the picture?
Yeah, Lawrence Sanney was at a invited to speak to a young people's conference, and Lorne was the director. He was 20 or 21, and totally disorganized. And so Dawson Troutman saw how disorganized it was, and he said, "Would you like some help?" And Lorne Sanney said, "Yeah, I'd like some help." So he said, "Well, meet me in the morning, early in the morning, you know, daylight, and we'll talk it over." So he explained to him how to get the camp organized. So that's the way they met. Then later, Lorne went to the Bible Institute of Los Angeles, and Dawson Troutman recruited him to run a high school Bible club. And then eventually he came on staff after that. But those were the links in the chain on that. And by the way, Lorne Sanney and Cliff Barris grew up in the same town, went to the same church. So they're lifetime friends. So that made another good connection with the Graham team, the fact that Lorne, the second president, and Cliff Barris had known each other all their life.
There. What year was it that Lorne came into the ministry?
1941. He was never in the military, but after he came out of Biola, he joined the staff. Yeah.
While we're at it, how about Charlie Riggs? Didn't he come in pretty close after that?
Yeah, Lawrence Sanney's first field assignment was working with the military at Seattle, at Tacoma, up there. Let's see, what's the name of the fort?
Fort Lewis.
Fort Lewis, yeah. But he didn't have much luck. But he found this big, tall, skinny second lieutenant that seemed to be interested. And he told Dawson Troutman, he said, "I've only got one man, you know, that's faithful, I can count on." And so Dawson said, "Well, pour your life into him." So he poured his life into Charlie Riggs. So after Dawson Troutman died, Lorne served on the Graham team as a director of counselor follow-up. When he quit that, Charlie Riggs took over and spent his life. So that one man that he took over, that's their association there. Okay, we've got time for one more, if I see another.
Would you mind sharing the life verse and tell us why it's your life verse?
Would you repeat?
What's your life verse and why?
What's
your life verse.
My life verse, okay. Before I became a Christian, the verse that described what was going on in my life was Proverbs 12:12-14. And it says, in the King James, "There's a way which seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. Even in laughter, the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness." That was me. Then, after I became a Christian, Psalm 107:9. "For he satisfies the hungry soul, and he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness." So I went from a life of unhappiness. He satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness. That's my life verse. Well, you've been very patient. I apologize, but I didn't keep the mic close enough for you guys in the back here. But you do have an evaluation sheet, so we've still got about 4 minutes to fill these in. But before you start on the evaluation sheet, is there any final comment that anybody has to have? Yeah, you want to make any comment? Not a question, but a comment.
Just a word about your Navy career.
Yeah, well, 24 years I spent in my Navy career, 24 years I spent in the Navy. And I went in the Navy, saved money to go to college, and law school, and politics. That was my career plan. I became a Christian during the first 4 years in the Navy. And Dawson Trotman persuaded me that this was the most fertile field in the world to evangelize and make disciples. So I stayed another two, and then stayed another four, and then got involved in a couple of wars. And so I finally ended up 24 years before Dawson Trotman persuaded me to leave the L. When we met in a hotel in Richmond, Virginia, he said, it's time for you to get out and come on staff and help us full time. And I said, well, 18 years ago, we decided the best thing I could do for the Navigators was to be a career man in the Navy. Well, he always had an answer. He said, every branch in me that bears fruit, he purges it that may bring forth fruit. I don't care how well things are going, you know, we need you. So I made plans then to retire and join him.
When did that conversation happen?
That happened in 1956.
He drove back home and died.
Four months before he died. Was that he asked when that conversation took place. 4 months before he died. Oh, I actually went to Scroon Lake in June of 1956 to make final plans for the transition, only to find out I got there Tuesday morning. He drowned the day before. So that was quite an upset. But Lauren Sani came up the next day, and he said, the Lord's given me the names of the people he wants on the team, and you're one of them. That was kind of hard to resist that, although I was the height of my career at that point. Okay, thank you very much, and we could go on hour after hour, but maybe we hit some high points here.